Tonight, we discuss piñatas and a whole lot of other things on Piñata, episode 6 of season 4 of Better Call Saul. The Better Call Saul After Show starts right now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, that's right. Welcome back to the Better Call Saul After Show. I'm Christian Blatt, joined as always by the one, the only, Al Greg.
Hey, your boy Al G, the other Bavarian brother, the Bavarian boy, cowboy.
That's right. We are your Hummels here on the Better Call Saul After Show. For everybody there live in the chat, let us know what you thought about this episode. And any things that you think we might have missed as we go along, please let us know. We always appreciate that sort of thing. Let's just give an overview right now. I'll start with you, Al. What did you think, just the episode as a whole, before we start breaking it down?
One word occurred to me, and that word was obsessive.
Yeah.
And it's a trait that we saw it back with Walter White. We saw it, we clearly see it in Gus, and now we're getting to see it more and more in Jimmy's character. Just his need to go back and to write things and to amend things to make sure his not only his will is sated, but also I think his ego is sated.
Yeah, I mean, I think we had I don't know. I don't think either of us were 100% convinced he was all done with the cell phone scheme last week, but it looked like he'd be like, all right, well, I got to get back on the straight and narrow. Now, there wasn't much about the character as we know him that would think that, you know, he's really going to stay away from being on the other side of the law. But it seemed like this scam was like, well, that didn't really work out. But no, so I think that was interesting. That, to me, was obviously the best part of the episode, just seeing him, you know, approach those kids again, which we'll talk about. There were some very interesting things. Before we break it down by character, I just wanted to sort of focus on how the episode started with a flashback, which is nice because he's running the Oscar pool, you know that the flashback takes place in 1993, a year that Scent of a Woman was inexplicably nominated for an Oscar, one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I always like to give credit to any of the sites that I look at the episode reviews, and I think this one's Vulture. Yeah, it was Vulture. They pointed out that the one woman was all in on Howard's End, which is sort of a nice play because of Howard in the firm. But so that puts it 10 years before the body of the episode, which so I guess this is 2003. So I don't know. I thought that was great. I liked seeing it. And we got to see Chuck again, which I did not expect. I mean, I didn't think there was no chance we'd see Chuck again, but I didn't expect to see him again so quickly. So what did you think about starting off with that flashback?
Great flashback. Jimmy's in the mailroom. You know, he's going around operating the betting pool, the lowly administrative mailboy he is. And what's cool is that you get to see how his relationship was with Kim. And obviously, you know, when Chuck comes. And Jimmy's typical, you know, chatty patty, chatting everybody up, schmoozing, probably more schmoozing done than work. But that's who he is. And that's how he builds it.
And then the other side of that, Kim is all work.
Kim
and
is all
she's
work.
Like, yeah, I already did the third floor.
You might want to step on it.
And then he's like, you know, sort of when they go to celebrate, you know, with the Bushmills. He's like, that's going to be you. Mm-hmm. And Kim just says, yep. So.
And, so we get to see, you know, her. We get to see how plucky Kim is, you know, and how she's studied Chuck's case and she knows everything about it. And, you know, they have that little back and forth. And we see, you know, she's going to be on the fast track, you know, just from law school. But what was telling is that when Jimmy, he tries to jump in on the conversation and he's not even, he characterizes it wrong. He says something, okay, I think the client was Isaacson.
Yes.
And Jimmy characterizes Isaacson as like they got his butt on a platter, like they beat him when Isaacson was actually the one they won the case for. Small detail, but what you take from it is Chuck kind of cut him down and like corrected him in front of Kim.
Yeah.
And then that was something I knew was going to stick with Jimmy. And then as soon as the scene was over, and we're talking about this theme of obsession we're seeing, as soon as the scene is over, he doesn't go back to schmoozing. Jimmy doesn't go back to doing the betting pool. He goes in the library and he's going to look up those cases because he got that client wrong. That's what I think.
I think you're absolutely right. In the chat right now, we have Jack Turner, and he says, Jimmy doesn't like being the uninformed third wheel. Mm-hmm. Boom, lawyer.
Ba-da.
Exactly. I thought that was a great way to start, though. You know, it's obviously reflects what we see later in the episode. So we'll talk about Kim. We'll talk about Jimmy. Obviously, we'll talk about Gus as well. But let's start out talking about Mike. We see him. He's mostly business in this episode, you know. So we see where the German work crew is going to be for 6 months, which he said is probably 8, probably 10 months. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he's absolutely right. You know, it's like, you know, the way that Gus had it set up, it was just a couple of houses. And he's like, you need an entertainment center, you need a bar, mm-hmm. you need, especially because they're German. Right. And, you know, you want
pool table, yeah, rec center, all ball, that. Yeah.
And you saw they got there. They're like, hey, this is pretty great. Because it's very clear that for these 6 to 10 months, they're not going out.
They're not going to see the light of day. And Mike is such a student of people, having been a cop. And we see this every episode. But he knows people that if these guys are going to be trapped down here, you can't just keep them alive, give them, you know, 3 hots and a cot. They got to be happy or they're going to be climbing the walls. And so Mike anticipates, you know, like what's going to go on with this, with the human being's psyche, you know, being trapped down there for all these months at a time.
Yeah, and we already clearly see the troublemaker, Kai, oh, yeah. who won't stop pouring himself a drink. And he's like, when do the girls get here? And, you know, Mike doesn't have any time for that sort of shenanigans. You know, somebody that's being the unruly kid on the first day of school. Mike's like, I don't have time for that.
And to show you, like, how much Mike is ahead of the curve, too, just when he's pitching the whole thing to Gus, he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, and we need some cameras. I mean, who would have thought of that? And that's, like, where you get – that's when you, like, the first glimpse of, like, Gus basically monitoring his own staff, you know. And those guys don't know. They're going to be hidden on the, you know, security TV, and they're going to be monitored the whole time. And, you know, that pays off a little later.
And Mike wisely points out, yeah, keep an eye on Kai.
Bam.
You know, I feel like, just a thought, Kai's not going to be around at the end of the season.
Kai
might not be around past next week. I know we're not doing predictions right now, but we're not going to see Kai for all that long. You know, not when you get on Mike's radar. And then there's a little bit of Mike's personal life in there. He finds time to stop by to see Anita, and he wants to pick up Kaylee at school the next day, you know, sort of trying to make things right, but... it's interesting because without sort of this one little moment, you'd feel like this guy doesn't have any kind of private life, that he's only, you know, one of those, the old cliche of married to his job. Mm. So you see he's still kind of grasping on and trying to keep some kind of semblance of family life. So it's interesting to kind of see the contrast from Mike, right?
Yeah, and so they don't crucify us out there, guys. Mike goes to see is his daughter-in-law Stacy, right, the blonde one, who had the son Maddie with his son, and he goes to basically apologize for his blow up.
Yeah.
That scene, which we both loved.
I mean, that was one of my favorite moments of the season.
Yeah,
but that's all right. Yeah,
class. I mean, it's case in point where somebody can be exactly 100% right, but still wrong at the same time, as far as like context and, you know, should everything that's true be said and said at the right at what particular time?
Well, you know, he didn't just call out the guy whose story he didn't believe. He kind of told everybody.
He called
everybody
out.
So I mean, it's like there's several points where he just went a little further and further. If you back it up a couple of times, it wouldn't have been that bad. But it got as bad as it could be.
True that.
Yeah. So he's trying to make that right. In terms of Gus, we see him interact with Mike a little bit. He really only has the one scene with Hector. He tells a great story about a coyote, I guess, that was stealing some fruit from a tree. Mm. And just the way that he just waited it out for it to get hungry. And he's like, I could have killed it right away. Mm-hmm. But I kept it alive for a long time. So, and I just love the way he's like, Hector, you're going to pull through.
you can see how, like, Gus has, like, developed this, like, sadistic, obsessive trait since a boy.
Yeah.
And it shows how he took, you know, this one little patch, you know, of dirt that nobody thought would grow anything to. Because on top of that, before the coyote comes in the picture, he's like, I'm going to see if I can grow something, because nobody says you can grow something. And he grows this tree, and it bears fruit, and here comes along this coyote, you know, he's put in all this time, and he's been a perfectionist, and here comes this coyote, you know, just another varmint, you know, messing with his success. And it just goes to show you how long Gus will wait to make someone suffer. Because it's not about killing the animals, not about killing the coyote, it's about making them suffer.
Yeah, exactly. That's really what the takeaway is here. It's he's got time. You know, there's no rush. So I thought that was interesting. We follow Kim to apparently just getting herself another new job, creating a business department, basically. I forget actually what the conversation was. I took a note on it. You know, she's basically
– yeah, another banking department.
The banking department, right, that's right. What it is. So we don't really have one. And then she's like, this is perfect, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, because she doesn't have enough on her plate. But it's – you know, as she explains to Jimmy, this is really going to help her sort of going over here. She's going to – has the potential to be a partner. And – you know, Jimmy is happy for her, tells her to do it, but you can see with his little meltdown over in the kitchen that, you know, he was putting on a brave face for her, but that really...
And what was going on with the... What was going on, not with the soundtrack, but with the score? With there
the
was something.
Well, the sound effects, you could hear all the sounds in the kitchen.
Yeah, everything was, like, magnified,
they got so
right?
loud because I think, you know, he's having kind of a panic attack.
Yeah.
You know, and he's great. Just... And then he just is like, that's not going to help anything. Let me just go back and tell him to do it. But... which, you know, you feel a little bad for Jimmy because he's really got these plans. I mean, he's drawn logos and he's writing things out, you know. In fact, when he spent the $4,000, and we'll talk about Jimmy in a minute, when he spent the $5,000, I was like, oh, no, he didn't get a sign made for his law firm, you know. I hoped that he didn't, so he didn't. Talk a little bit about Kim this week.
And I'm going to talk to Kim, but I'm going to go by way of Jimmy, how that was just another nail in the coffin of this dream of living this straight life with Kim and him having the, you know, this perfect practice again. And I kind of felt bad for him, but as soon as he shot it down, I knew that was just going to – just one more trigger toward becoming Saul, one more step there.
And yeah. We're getting very close to seeing Saul.
And Jimmy's has less Fs to give. Their relationship continues to grow apart, as do their interests. And it's kind of sad, but, you know, it's not anything we didn't see coming.
No, I mean, obviously. I mean, we've seen where this all goes, but also just sort of from watching this show in a linear way, you're just like, well, this isn't all going to really work out for him in some way or another. Let's talk about Jimmy. Sort of give us – Al, give us your thoughts on basically Jimmy's arc throughout this episode. You know, we see a little bit of some ups and downs for him this week.
Right, yeah. I mean, we see the there are those moments where those moments of idealism that pop up, you know what I mean, where he's scribbling and he's kind of wants to sketch out this plan where he actually does want to make the law firm and be a good lawyer and everybody's going to know about it. It's the same thing he told he told the guy down at the center who reports to every week about his progress.
Right.
But the minute it gets shot down, Slippin' Jimmy slips right back into what he knows, and this time he's going Slippin' Jimmy, but he's going prepared, and he's going to dot all his I's and cross his T's. He's not going to forget about these little punks, and we know he puts on his Tashini tracksuit, his old Takinis, you know. Yeah. Do you guys remember those old tennis suits? Oh, my gosh. And it's a gold chain. It's back on. Jimmy's in character, and we know he's got game, and we know he's ready to set it up. And he's okay, and at this point, I think he's in full acceptance. Okay, the legal thing isn't going to happen. It's back into hustle mode, and this is where I left off, and I'm going to go pick up where I left off, and not only I'm going to tie up this loose end with these kids.
Yeah, we see the return of Street Jimmy, basically, right. When he puts on his uniform to basically transform himself into Street Jimmy. And I thought that it was very clear that we were going to kind of get that moment. So one of the things that kind of starts, obviously he's planning this law firm. Kim's basically like, you know, this isn't going to happen, basically, is what she tells him. But he also gets this call about a will that he had made for Mrs. Strauss. And in painstaking detail, he remembers a lot about it as soon as he asks the guy who calls him. And you and I had a little conversation before we started. You had a question about the Hummel, so let's bring that up and see what the audience thinks.
Yeah, I have a question about the Hummel. And okay, so Jimmy, he takes the call from Brett, who's I guess Miss Strauss was his aunt,
right?
And she passed, and she was part of the whole Sandpiper deal. And there's a couple of things that need clarifying. Jimmy, as we know, is no longer a practicing lawyer. But what the question I was asking about, and we were both trying to figure out, is he starts bringing up this whole thing about, yeah, well, you got the figurine, right? You got the Hummel, right?
We're like, where it went. Yeah.
Yeah.
And my interpretation of that was it was like in the will and it was left to, you know, like a nephew or something. and he just kind of wanted to know where it was, because as we saw earlier this season, he knows the value of Hummels. True. So if it was going to be just sitting around somewhere, mm-hmm. he's like, you know, let me swing by. You know, he's always thinking a couple moves down the chessboard.
And thank you for clarifying that. And also let us know in the audience, those of you who caught that as well, because it just goes to show right when you get to feel a little bit of empathy for Jimmy, because he pulls out the old commercial. Was she the older woman in the commercial? Anyway, he reminisces back to the
same. Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was – I don't think that was her. I think he just wanted to watch sort of an old commercial. It could have been her. Yeah, I wasn't quite sure.
They don't establish that. But the point is Jimmy's feeling wistful and, you know, sentimental about those old times. You know, and Jimmy is actually, with all of his shortcomings, he actually used to like and be able to relate working with these elderly people. I think that was like one of his endearing qualities. But, I mean, the fact that he goes right back to scheming, like you said, it just reveals, like, you know – again, another rung, how far slipping Jimmy has slipped down the ladder.
Jack Turner in the chat. There's a bunch of people in the chat now. Thanks, everybody, for being there. Jack says, Jimmy and Kim have no idea what is going on in the other's life. This episode seemed to be the start of the end for Jimmy and Kim. I think this isn't the start. This is just the continuation. But this was basically – not even a reminder. This is just like, hey, it is very clearly going – you know, this isn't going to last.
They're both going two directions. And I'm sorry, keep going, man.
No, that was it. Go ahead.
I was just curious. You were asking me about Kim earlier. And I did find it curious that we know she's still interested in doing her public defender work, you know, her pro bono work, doesn't pay Jack. And she goes back to what's the name of this other law firm? Schwartzman.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it matters so much. I took a note of that, too. But
yeah. Schwartzcard Oakley, whatever the name is. Yeah. The guy who she knew from before. It's. I find it curious, though, that even though she offers to open this banking department for him, and we know that would be something that she can do easily. She's like the banking expert, having worked on Mesa Verde so long. I just found that a little, not puzzling, but a little ironic, the fact that she's willing to go back to that banking world. So I guess what I deduce from that is that it's not that she's turned off on the whole idea of banking or doing the legal aspect of banking, but she'd much rather do it on a smaller scale and then as a startup rather than this big Mesa Verde thing.
Yeah, she really wants to get to the public defender stuff. And, you know, her finally telling Jimmy she's doing that, first of all, it's interesting, as Jack Turner mentioned, you know, that it's like this is the first time it comes up, and clearly she's been at it for a while. So I think he's a little taken. It's like, really? You're doing that? Okay. So, yeah. And also back to Gus, I guess there's some discussion. Robert Kirkendall says the animal Gus was talking about is a coati. So I heard it as coyote, but, you know, now that I'm remembering it, I do think he was saying something else. It's a South American raccoon, and it was implied that Gus tortured the cat, and Jack Turner always found Gus to be a businessman and only out for revenge, not cruel. This business with Hector is personal, as he killed his friend torturing, and yeah, he's just basically saying this is what I'm capable of. Do you feel like that's an accurate assessment?
Yeah, I mean, he nailed it, you know, and then that's the scariest thing about – and we've all seen how Breaking Bad ends, and we see what happens to Gus. Spoiler alert. But
spoiler alert for the future, which is really
spoiler alert.
Thank you.
Spoiler alert.
If you haven't seen Breaking Bad.
For the chronological future, but it's our past.
But to go ahead and throw it out there, Gus, the consummate businessman, the guy who's meticulous about his business to a T, what was his downfall? It was this one need to get revenge on Salamanca. And there it is, you know. That's the seeds are already planted.
Colby in the chat says, you really see Jimmy's process and how he believes he should deal with grief and adversity and the way he tries to motivate Howard. Yeah, that was actually what I wanted to move on to next. Kind of a great, like, hey, I need my $5,000. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was great. You know, he's like basically saying, like, all right, so you've had some setbacks. Get it together. What did you think about that interaction with Howard?
I love that scene, and that was the scene I was trying to think for. Ladies and gentlemen, what's the term when you point out a flaw in someone else, really, because it's something that you're trying to overcompensate for and you don't want people to know you have yourself? It's not deflecting, but Jimmy, basically, he doesn't want to deal with his grief. He sees Howard dealing with his grief, and then Jimmy doesn't want to go back and reflect on it the way Howard's going and reflecting on it and, like, you know, take on all this and just, you know, really just have to deal with all these emotions and it probably bury him like it's burying Howard. So he would rather rib Howard and down Howard for the flaws that he has, something that he's not willing to deal with, his own ability to slack off, not deal with Howard, and to not deal with business property, and to cut corners. He's really talking about himself when he's holding up the mirror to Howard.
Yeah, and at the same time, I think he thinks, like, he's actually trying to motivate him. He's like, come on, look what happened to this place. Mm. You know, we saw in the flashback what this used to be like, you know, just 10 short years ago. So come on, make it more like that. Mm. I think that it's sort of a two-pronged thing, but definitely what you were saying. We basically that's what I wanted to point out from the chat was that everyone's saying that is Mrs. Strauss from the commercial. So she was basically in the commercial, and that's why he was looking at it.
Makes sense.
And I love anytime we see a box of VHS cassettes, that always takes me back. So I always enjoy that, because even in 2003 you'd still have some VHS cassettes, because, you know, you didn't — would you have a DVD burner? No, of course not. So still commonly used, so that's always fun to see. All right, so as we have been talking about, this motivates Jimmy to get back to the street life. And he, you know, he goes and picks up his $5,000 check. And again, I thought he was buying a stupid, gigantic sign. I love that conversation with the lady. It's like, well, who makes the big ones that they use in Vegas? And then he's like, eh, never mind, because he has to take the call. And I think that it's more cell phones. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I just love that he just keeps bringing them back into the nail salon. And then the lady who's there is like, you can't sell these out here. He's like, don't worry, I'm not going to. Well, they're a fire hazard. And Al, how does Jimmy handle the situation?
That was a great scene. Mrs. Newman, classic Jimmy, slider or burner phone. That's how you do it, man. One hand washes the other. That'll take care of her.
Yeah, exactly. And now we know that these prepaid phones have 350 minutes. I'm like, this is actually a pretty good deal.
That's a pretty good deal. Yeah, yeah.
Especially 2003.
That's enough to shut her up.
Yeah, exactly. She'll be fine. You know.
One thing is also, too, I think this happened in the Nelson, but correct me if I'm wrong, it's a phone call that Jimmy made. And you hear him talking about — he's asking about a location. And he mentions the word pinatas.
And I didn't really think anything of it. Yeah. And then when we get to see the pinatas, which we'll talk about in a moment, you're like, oh,
he's booking the space.
Title of the episode, by the way, Pinatas. It always comes together, which I love about this show.
He's
running sort of a little side business. He even uses the phrase, like, it's just a side business. Mm-hmm. Aren't you a lawyer anymore? You know, and it's just like, yeah, well, leave me alone. I'm paying. I can put whatever I want in here. And I love her explanation that the phones were a fire hazard.
Of course.
But not if you get a free one. So, so we hear that call that he makes. And I do love the way that, as we said, as you said, that he's got the tracksuit on and he goes and he approaches the kids who rolled him and took his cash last time. Mm-hmm. And they definitely see him as a mark again. And by the way, Jimmy really hauls ass. When he runs from those kids, I'm like, they're like half his age. And he's just like, yeah, well, try and catch me. Now, obviously, that was a whole setup, which we'll talk about in a second. But and one of the kids even says, like, you must be the stupidest person alive, or the stupidest person I've ever met. And Jimmy has to disagree, you know. But it's nice because there is that moment where he gets caught. Now, did you think that was – legitimately what was happening, or did you think that he had somebody that was going to come
Jimmy
down?
I knew Jimmy was going to go out like that a second time, you know, not Jimmy when he's on his game and he's got his gold chain on. But here's the funny thing, though. We go back to, like, the morality of a, quote, street hustler. I like the fact that he gave these guys an opportunity to get cut in on a square deal.
Yeah.
But because they were too stupid and short-sighted, and it was really his most knucklehead punks their age, it probably would be, they couldn't see it. And then, of course, you know, they end up, you know, getting the consequences for their greedy actions for trying to jump him again.
To be fair, he definitely lowballed them with $100 a night. Now, I think he did that for negotiating purposes. Like, he's probably prepared to give them, like, you know, $100.
If they would have said $200, maybe that would have been cool.
Or maybe $100 each. You know, maybe that's what he was prepared to get to. So they were probably like, no, just give us all of your money. Yeah. And then I just love the way he ran, though.
Greed, ladies and gentlemen, greed.
And we do indeed see Huel, and as, you know, sort of after, which we shouldn't jump ahead too much, but, you know, we'll talk about sort of the actual pinata moment in a second. But and then the other guy they believe is actually Nick Trumbull points out it was Man Mountain from season 1, episode 9. So that's nice. Who the other guy is. So you see, nice. We've got it all together there. Those are our masked culprits. And it's just it's a great scene, sort of them getting tagged and upside down. And I think that it was just set up. It just was a beautiful shot of a couple guys going to town on piñatas.
Beautiful and reveal. Just,
and of course, Jimmy plays it perfectly. It's like, okay, guys, we're done. I appreciate the enthusiasm. And then the back goes basically right up to the kid's face. And I just, you know, again, one of my favorite scenes from the season. The, you know, Mike in the support group, and then this. These yeah. are right up there so far. Through 6 episodes of the season, those are kind of 2 of my favorite moments. Give us your thoughts as you watch
obviously the way it was shot and the reveal that the camera, you know, pans and you reveal that they're tied up upside down with tape in their mouth and it's dark and it's scary. And this dovetails perfectly into our news segment whenever you're ready to go in that.
You know what? It's time for news.
Time for perfect. News.
I love a good segue better than anybody, so let's go.
Right on. Okay, Christian, as we were saying, that wonderful scene, you know, where in the little store or warehouse where they have the piñata set up, that reveal, as first you see the kids are upside down.
Yeah.
You know, they're hanging, they duct tape, you know, they're gaffled up. The camera slowly reveals that that all of the kids are tied up, hanging upside down. Then you just see things swinging back and forward in the background and the foreground, building like this whole ominous tension. And as we know, after the steady walk up of two guys, you know, beating the piñatas, getting closer and closer to this face, well, the smaller guy who takes off his mask is our boy Huel.
What?
And this is an update on our boy Huel. Huel is played by Lavelle Maurice Crawford. He was born in 1968, which makes he'll turn 50 this year. He's an American comedian. And the interesting thing about that scene, ladies and gentlemen, Huel has been on a lifestyle change. He had actually lost weight. He lost 130 pounds.
Good for Huel.
Good for Huel, but looked totally different than the way he used to before.
Absolutely.
So they actually had to go in and, like, you know, they had to kind of rework the way they had the stand-in, because they shot a stand-in first, and they had to bring Huel in a fat suit just to make him just to make the continuity match. And I'm going to read you what Huel said.
Please do.
All right. And they're asking about the scene they called him back. When they finally called me to let me know they were bringing me in, what was strange was that I had a lifestyle change. In real life, I lost 130 pounds, so I looked totally different, which is great for the prequel for him to be in decent shape, because you wouldn't hire a bodyguard if he can't do nothing. When they saw me, they were like, man, I think you lost too much weight. They had already filmed my my parts, but they had a few more pieces to get, so they were trying to put a fat suit on me. That was so hilarious. Ladies and gentlemen, our heel factoid of the day, Lavelle Crawford.
Thank you for that. Yeah, very exciting. And it's funny because just last week in the chat, basically after the episode posted, you had people that were clamoring for Huel. They felt like we were getting pretty close. Mm. Him getting jumped, Jimmy getting jumped. They were like, "Great, it's time for Huel," and you're absolutely right. It was clearly time. And so, and if everybody called that, good for you. So anyway, that brings us kind of to the end of this episode. But just a couple of pull on a couple of threads from last week's chat. And Crescian Medston points out sort of when Mike was evaluating the guys that could do this job, the Frenchman, he bragged about the previous job, including the location and length of the tunnel, and it means he can't keep a secret. I think that's absolutely right. Mike heard that, and he's like, you know, and that's probably why Gus called
him. And he even alluded to something like, I don't know if it was in Mexico or Latin America, but almost like it was like another cartel thing. He's like, dude, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, it was D-Dastard06 was the one who said that he felt like it was time for Huel, basically after that happened.
Can't ever have too much Huel.
Yeah, right, exactly. there were, of course, we had some Easter egg nods to Breaking Bad last week, the bouncing car hot dog stand where Jesse buys a gun, and the guy who told Walt, stay out of my territory, shows up to buy a burner phone. Yeah, we did mention that last week, yeah. And everybody loves the Street Life song, yeah. Right, as we all know.
Classic.
Kieran Bradley says, Vince Gilligan likes finishing his stories and tying up all loose ends. I personally think Better Call Saul will finish at season 5 as a double-part season a la Breaking Bad. Is a series focusing Jesse next after this? I think anything's possible. I do wonder if at some point it's like, do you want to keep going back into this world or do you want to maybe take a break for a little bit? But I think it'd be interesting. Let us know in the chat what you think, what maybe Vince might do next. If there were to be another Breaking Bad related series, what would you like to see? Let us know and we can talk about
it. Can I throw this out there?
Please do.
A little segue. Just because we find ourselves always going back to these reoccurring characters, you know, who these lovable characters who were, you know, we fell in love with in Breaking Bad. And a couple of weeks ago, I did a special segment on, you know, some of the characters we had seen. What was the guy? Like Rich Guy Ken. You know what I mean? Those random. Vulture just did a whole new list this week, Vulture.com, of all the reoccurring characters that are coming up the rest of the season and have reoccurred so far. So I'm wondering if you guys would like maybe us to perhaps to review a reoccurring character of the week, you know, maybe kind of review them like we
like
did
Huel. Idea.
Just throwing that out there if you guys would be interested in a certain segment like that, because that seems to be the talk on all the internets too.
In a moment, we'll get to Uncomfortable Moment of the Week. We had a little back and forth with someone last week named Adam Reichert, and you know what he said? He said, I give props where props are due. You guys pronounced my name right, made me laugh, and at least have the balls to admit when you aren't on top of something. We mentioned from the beginning that we don't always know what's going on. That's why we love everybody in the chat who knows better than we do. Some people take it personally, like, oh, you think you know more than we do? No, yes, please, you definitely know more than we do, and that's why we're so glad that you guys are here to talk
with us. C plus, C minus, B minus, yeah. C plus.
Exactly. Look, we're going to graduate either way. And final comment from the chat, something that we've talked about so much over the last few weeks. Steve Fortuna says, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, and sometimes a letter from Chuck is just a letter from Chuck. Hmm. Chuck's death changed Jimmy. The letter merely confirms his suspicions about Chuck's motives, but doesn't absolve his conflicted feelings of relief and guilt. Kim Wexler is a straight shooter and would never deceive her boyfriend that way. It's not something she would do for anyone ever, even to spare their feelings. Look what she does for that scumbag kid, going to the wall to defend him, even pissing off the DA. She's 100% advocating for truth and gives tough love to people who've messed up their lives. Either you guys are too cynical or your judgment is surely lacking. I think we're just it's a theory. I think that's a great, strong assessment of Kim, though, what Steve
and,
just
and
gave
And can
us.
I go out and this kind of doves into predictions along the way of Kim? We saw her looking at the at the old files, I think, amidst her Mesa Verde files,
yeah.
She has, like, her public defender files. And I think one of them was that client,
yeah.
The kid who she had gotten off, the smart-ass one, who was, like, wasn't appreciative. And I think what we're also supposed to glean from that is not just that Clint, that Kim, you know, is of the straight and narrow and wants to constantly do things with moral integrity and help other people. Though that is the case, Kim has a bad problem of trying to fix people.
Absolutely.
Which is why she's with Jimmy.
Exactly.
Which
why
is
she's
why
with
she's trying to fix all these free clients, you know, she's working pro bono for doing at the public defender's office. And some of them are unfixable. And I think that's the prediction, you know, that's going to come out to her detriment in the end.
And speaking of Kim, we got the news that 3 weeks from now is when the cast will come off. So maybe before the end of the season.
Yeah.
But I feel like. Well, I was going to say, I feel like the cast's been around forever. It's been around the whole season, so it'll be nice. All right. So we have our recurring segment, Uncomfortable Moment of the Week. And give us what the Uncomfortable Moment was.
Uncomfortable Moment of the Week, though there may have been many, ladies and gentlemen. I think Chris and I both agreed that it was the piñata scene.
Yes.
And again, just to kind of backtrack on the way, just the way it was shot. The whole thing was dark. You couldn't see the two guys creeping up. You know, you just see the bat and the silhouette, you know, candy falling on the ground.
As always, great cinematography on the show.
Yeah.
Great Foley sound effects, just dragging the bat on
dragging,
the ground.
Exactly.
Everything about that scene was perfect.
The candy crackling.
It was immensely entertaining, mm-hmm. but it was a very uncomfortable moment.
And the climax has to be the final reveal. I don't know if you guys caught this, but I love this particular shot. We already know the guys are hanging upside down, but you're seeing them when the camera was right side up. But the very last scene, they actually appear to be inverted, almost standing up. And the way they accomplished that shot is the camera's turned upside down while they're turned upside down.
Yeah, definitely. That was incredible. No, that's a great insight. So always let us know what you think the uncomfortable moment of the week was, and we will always try and get that in there. And any of the feedback to any of the things that we said tonight or anything from the episode, go ahead and leave them. As you just heard, we will go back next week and we will always read the archived comments. So that's it for this week, but we will see you next week. By the way, next week, episode 7, it's almost over. Believe it or not.
I can't believe it.
I know. But until then, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. And Al, where do people find you?
Everybody, your boy Al G. You can follow me at JamaicaHouseDoc on Twitter and on Instagram at Al G_JamaicaHouseFilm.
Like I said, we will see you next Monday at 10 Pacific. Until then, have a great one. Thanks so much to everybody who joined us in the chat. We'll see you next week.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.